G'day Swabbers, welcome back to season three of The Swab, the Swabcast with Georgie Carroll. So I hope you've been enjoying it so far. You seem to have been. There's been some good feedback on the socials. Do go to my Facebook page. God, I'm a slut for attention, aren't I? Go to my Facebook page or The Swab Facebook page just to see what people are chatting about on there.
Admissions.
I think the last time we chatted, Swabbers, I was possibly touring WA and going around the mines. Apologies to anyone who is a miner. But it's not your fault. I just found the whole thing greedy. It was all like an evil story from the Bible. It was just like a massive pit. Right now I'm on tour in Queensland, which I'm finding much more blissful and beautiful. So I've been up to something called Thursday Island. Not many of you have been there. This is part of the Torres Strait Islands. I'm learning so much. I honestly had never thought about where they were and didn't know that they were part of Australia. I'm doing a lot of listening and not much talking on these bus trips. That's when we go around, which is not my default setting, but I'm learning loads. So the Torres Strait Islands, what you'd do is you'd fly to Cairns. Took me 2 days, three planes, a ferry that was decommissioned straight after we'd been on it. To get to an island that you could walk across in 20 minutes. You go up to Cairns and then you fly another 2 hours north on Horn Island and then you get a ferry. It's bloody huge, this country. Speaking of huge, we are speaking to someone who is probably only halfway across the country today, but still fucking thousands of kilometres away from me. It's just ridiculously big, this country. You're going to love today's guest, by the way. We'll get to him after the break. If you've never been round far north Queensland, they are responsible for a lot of the things we eat, which I just praise them for. Another reason to enjoy them. I was in a town yesterday. Not sorry if you're vegetarian. It just is. I was in a town yesterday. I can't even remember what it was called. Dolby it was called. And there'd be trucks of cows coming in and then empty trucks leaving. It was a lot. For a meat eater like myself to be slapped in the face with it like that. It was, so they do that and they sugarcane fields. Now, this has been a great joy to me. I had no idea that sugar was a vegetable. I don't know where I thought it came from, but I'm so happy that it is just in a field. It's plant-based. We can eat it. It's one of your five a day now, sugarcane. On top of that, in order for the farmers to get it, the fields are full of snakes and they still go in there and get it for us. So I think we owe it to them to eat more sugar. Hope you've enjoyed the little stories of my journeys around. Okay, so I'm in a car with non-medical people. How much bollocks do non-medical people spout? We've had claims. Someone thought their sister caught autism from anorexia when they starved their brain. So this is the kind of thing that I have to sit there and just listen to. Somebody else thought that your heart rate increased even on the steps when you just walk to the kitchen. They thought your heart rate increased by 20. I'm keeping quiet because every time we do a quiz, like the age online quiz, a medical question will come up and I won't know the answer because it's not something you need to know as a nurse. I don't know how many bones there are in the body or what the predominant metal is in the body. It's calcium, by the way. Who the fuck knew that calcium was a metal? I certainly didn't. All right, enough waffle. I'm loving the guests on this series. And let me tell you who we've got on today. This has been a long journey. This guest is somebody who I wanted from the very beginning of my podcast. The first time I put a call out, everyone was going, you need Christian Dingo. He's been very hard to get hold of because he's a very busy nurse and midwife working in the Yolnu, Anindil Yakwa, and Numbarindi people lands of remote Arnhem Land. Now, I understand fully that I fucked up a lot of those words, but something I am learning is it's better to try and fail than not give it a shot. So we're going to speak to him after the break. What's not to love about a male midwife out in the Arnhem Lands? Let's see after the break. All right, we are back. We are now in the interview section where we probe people to see what kind of things they are packing.
Like I said, I've wanted to speak to this guy for a very long time. We'll explain why it's taken so long. Welcome to the show, nurse, midwife, out in the Arnhem Lands, Christian Dingo. Welcome to the swap.
Hello, Georgie. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's such a joy to see you. You're such a healthy looking thing. Are you plant-based?
Oh, I used to be. I wish I was. But since I got married, I married a carnivore who loves meat. And so we've along, you know, what they call compromise.
It's called compromise caving is what it's called.
Yeah, caving.
Yeah, that's what makes a marriage work. I know, this is such a lovely story. Well, it's a lovely and, well, the main bit's lovely of the story. So me and you started chatting over a year ago. People had said to me, you've got to have Christian on the podcast. I mean, your profile picture on Facebook is you nursing on horseback. So that's what drew me. I don't know anyone else. Is this a common thing? Maybe out in Arnhem Land? Why are we on horseback?
No, that was in a remote community. I think it's the last community, actually, Aboriginal community, to outlaw traditional spearing. And in this community, there's a lot of wild animals around, and one of their favourite pastimes is trapping these wild animals. And one of them trapped a foal years ago, and as it grew up, it just grew up rough. It actually thinks it's a wild pig, and it runs around with the other wild pigs and knocks over rubbish bins and tries to bite people. And that's called Midnight. And I got sick of this horse trying to bite me on the way home from the clinic every day. And I told him, I'm going to ride you one day. And then we had COVID happening everywhere else in Australia. And in the community, they were just petrified. And we just started to bring in PPE and masks and using it for everything, you know, even if you were, had to open the door to the clinic, you had to be in full PPE. And so everyone was getting freaked out and not showing up to the clinic. So I thought, no, I'll knock over. Two birds with one stone. I talked to the owner of the horse, Ezekiel, and he's like, yeah, well, go for it, see if it'll have you. And I rode it, and it took me a while, but I rode Midnight around town while I was fully clad in full PPE, and I went from house to house just chatting to the locals, letting them know, look, it's not scary. They came out going, who's this? Oh, look, it's Christian up on a horse. And it was just a funny reaching out,
that
having a laugh,
best.
Demystifying the whole PPE thing, get ready for COVID. Yeah, it was it worked in the end.
I feel like it's a story that's familiar to any nurse anywhere in the country. When something's aggressive to you, you've just got to make friends with it and then own it. Like the horse. That's so cool. Yes, yeah, so that was a picture I saw of you. And then we had a chat on the phone. Male midwife was another thing that stood out. It's still, the term is still midwife. It's not a mid-husband. It's still midwife, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It comes from... That's probably the most common question I get asked, Stuart.
Yeah, I would think
it comes from old Middle English, where it means mid means with and wife means woman. So it's just whoever's with the woman is the midwife. Yeah.
Well, that must be strange in Indigenous communities, because something I believe I've learned, although all communities are different, is there's women's business and men's business.
Yeah, that's true.
And you'd be messing in the women's business.
Yeah, yeah.
How's that working for you?
Well, I was a bit apprehensive as well as to how this would go. But at the end of the day, it's all about trust. It's building trusting relationships. Over time, I've been working and building these trusting relationships. And, you know, it started off with simple things like when I went fishing, I would come around and I'd drop the fish off at the different houses to the different pregnant clients I had. It was checking when they were in hospital, like if I had to get flown out, I would check on their family for them. So you built relationship and then they started to trust you. And there was a health symposium I went to where it was an Aboriginal health symposium. There were Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people there and Aboriginal health workers. And the symposium split at one point to talk about men's business and women's business.
Yeah.
And a particular strong female elder came up to me and she said, Christian, I want you to come in. I want you to be present when we talk about certain things.
Whoa.
And I said, no, I'm not. I can't go in. And she said, no, I want you to come in. I'm inviting you in. And it took some convincing. And I stood in the back of the room and kept my mouth shut and just... I looked at the ground a lot because there were a lot of eyes looking at me, you know, people, what are you doing here? But no, this person and another got up and they just said, look, there is a man in the room who have invited him to Nith because he's a midwife. There's obviously not many out in remote communities. And look, we trust him, you know, and we want him here for this.
Oh, mate, I trust you.
So I have been invited. I've never pushed myself anywhere. It's only by invitation and trust building. And it's whoever the woman wants, you know. If she doesn't want me there, that's fine. But I've found at different times I've been requested to be the midwife, even when we're in situations where there are female midwives. And I think that comes down to, you know, the fundamentals of midwifery, which is building trust with the woman, putting the woman first, giving her voice and agency, and making that paramount.
Whoa, you're almost making me want another child here. Although, and then I'll come out to Arnhem and have it.
How many do you have, Georgie?
I got two.
You know what? You could go for the title. Have you heard of if you have five or more kids, you get a special clinical title?
What's that?
If you're just having one kid, you're called a primary Paris woman. If you have more than one, you're called a multi-Paris woman. But if you have five or more children, you get the title Grand Multi-Paris Woman. And I'm one of six boys, so my mum is a Grand Multi-Paris Woman.
Oh, that's cool. Have you got any designs on having children or how many you'd have?
Oh, I've been stinging to have kids. We haven't gotten any yet, but
oh yeah, yeah.
We're keen to have some. I tell my wife I want three sets of twins.
Oh, crikey. That would be exciting, wouldn't it? We've got twins in the family as well. I thought I wanted twins until I had one, and then I was like, nah, one is enough. So the next thing that happened in our story was I rang you because of the Facebook page and the donkey, the horse and the male midwifery. And you said, well, actually, I'd love to be on the podcast, but I'm about to get married to Lion. So we've got a dingo and a lion. That sparked a conversation in our house. If we were, me and my husband were animals, what we were, and we were fox and flamingo. I don't quite know how that works, but you're dingo and lion. And yeah, so you got married and I've seen, because you've, for reasons that will become apparent, you've actually got married twice, have you? You had to repeat the wedding ceremony.
No, I only got married once.
Oh, I thought you'd kind of... Okay, tell them what happened after the wedding, and then I'll tell you why I thought that happened.
So we got married up here in Arnhem Land, in Yirrkala, and the first day of the honeymoon, so it's a remote... We're right on the peninsula at the top of the Gulf, and the only way in or out is by air or by a long, long dirt road.
And, or your horse.
Or your horse. Well, you might need to take a few horses to get along this road.
Yeah.
So I had my troopie packed up, ready to go on a honeymoon. We had a big adventure planned. And on the first day of the honeymoon, we got probably halfway along that track and we had a car accident and the troopie rolled and ripped apart. And I was knocked unconscious and I broke my spine. And Caroline, so she's called Lion because that's, I think you call an anagram for Caroline. She calls herself Lion.
Yeah.
And she dragged me out of the troopy and eventually I woke up and we were about 6 Ks from the nearest town. And so she kind of rummaged through the wreckage to find her running shoes and she went for a run. And she took off for about 6 Ks to the nearest town, hoping to either get there or wave someone down on the way. And I think one car actually passed her. And then the second car stopped for her, which is rare. You don't see many cars on the track at that time of year. And then, they took her to the local clinic where they rushed around and got their troopy ambulance to come out and get me.
Yeah.
And, basically, I was flown out from there to Darwin Hospital and then airlifted to Adelaide Hospital to get emergency spinal surgery.
This was it? This was like all within how many hours of getting married? Was it the 24 hours or was it the...
No, I think it was a day or two after, from what I remember.
That's what I remember seeing. And then you were hospitalised for quite a while with this back. I mean, you were always going to be able to nurse. We fully know that people can nurse if they aren't mobile anymore. But was it ever going to be that kind of...
I was on buckets of ketamine. I didn't know where I was. I was flying around having a great time. But they told me I would never walk again. They thought I'd severed my cord. But it turns out that I hadn't. And then they said I'd be in a wheelchair for the rest of my life. But I'm walking around now. I'm doing better. There's still a fair way to go, but we're doing a lot better than those.
Still got to get off the ketamine.
Weeks. I need something to get through the day.
You'll never walk again. How can they say that and then people do it? So many people are like, you will never have a baby. You will never walk again. They will never speak. And then it happens. It's such a sweeping statement.
Yeah, I remember it. The particular clinician who told me that hadn't really assessed me. She hadn't, she didn't even ask if I could wiggle my toes. And I was cooked on ketamine because the pain was unbearable and they'd given me everything they had. I think I drained the local clinic of all their morphine before the care flight landed and gave me ketamine. But I remember when I got to the hospital, the registrar came out and told me this. And as soon as I heard it, I remember getting really angry and yelling at her, "What are you talking about? Look, I can move." And I could move one toe just slightly.
Oh,
and I was so proud of that. And I was just, "Check that out. Look, I could walk." And I was just so angry. I just thought, she didn't know what she was talking about. But she was. She was surprised. She went, oh, okay, yeah, you can. All right, well, okay, I'll go back and I'll check the scans. I think my scans just looked quite bad.
Yeah. I do think that they make these sweeping statements sometimes. And then, like, you always see them in women's magazines, you know, like, take a break and take five. It was like, The doctor said I had 1 hour to live and I'm still here.
I think they're scared. I think they're sometimes scared just as much as us, and they don't know how to, like, it's so overwhelming for them maybe, and they're not sure how to break the news. And so they maybe in their fear of how bad it could be, they say the worst thing that could happen. I don't know.
I'm so glad you're well off it, though. I mean, just well anyway is good, isn't it? And then, the fact that you're mobile too is huge.
Back at work, so it's been a huge move. But, shocking start to the wedding.
So, Arnhem Land, I think you heard in my prelogue talking to you. I'm not fond of the beasties. Like, no one's fond of snakes. Well, some people are, but they're odd. To the point where I've called a snake catcher on a basketball in a hedge before now because I thought it was a snake. So... You know, the texture of a basketball, how it's all... I just saw that through the hedge.
Although it is kind of round, isn't it?
Well, it's round, but I only saw a little bit of it through the hedge. So I called the snake catcher and they were like, "Okay, what colour's a snake?" And I'm like, "Orange." And they're like, "Oh, we don't have orange snakes." I'm like, "Well, you do now." And then they come round and they're like, that would be a basketball. Is there a high incidence of animal attack out in Arnhem Land, apart from the horse getting you? Anything else?
Yeah. Crocodile, box jellyfish, Yukanji. I think this year there's been a couple guys gored by buffalo. There's lots of buffalo up here.
I did see a sign up in Thursday Island that was warning crocodiles spotted in this area. Crocodile attack may cause harm.
It may.
I feel like it needs to be stronger wording. And then kids were still swimming in that water.
Well, up here often you'll see people throw the dog in first. And watch the dogs swim for a bit before they go in for a swim, just to make sure there's no crocodiles in there.
Perhaps I'd put my least favourite kid in first and see what happens. Yeah, but I think you had a dicey incident with one of our snake friends, didn't you?
I did. I've been bitten by and fully envenomated by a brown snake.
So we have listeners in England and America, predominantly, I think, as well as Australia. For those of you who don't know, brown snake can kill an adult within maybe an hour. I think some people just get away with it. I've only ever seen one death from a brown snake. But they'd got bitten in Melbourne and then carried on their journey to Adelaide for some stupid reason. but you didn't. So you've already been airlifted from Arnhem Lands. And then what happened with the snake?
Oh, this was two years earlier. I was in WA, actually, in Karangini National Park. And I'd just been for a swim, and I was honestly minding my own business, which is when all this kind of stuff happens. And it came out of the bushes and bit me on my little toe and then pissed off again. And there was only one little puncture mark. And
so much for the theory that they don't come and get you. Everyone's like, "Oh, they don't want to get you. You'd have to really rouse it up to get bitten."
They reckon browns are one of the more aggressive ones. I think they're the second poisonous as well.
Yeah.
And it was, what I also found out is an adult snake will usually hold back the venom and just say that the kills they want to use it on. But I got bitten by a juvenile brown and they just can't hold on to their venom. They're like teenage boy, they say they go. And I got fully envenomated with it. And we weren't quite sure because I felt like a bee sting, and then I looked down and saw it taken off, and there was only one little red dot and it disappeared, and we weren't too sure. Anyway, we kept walking, and then I just got this kind of frontal headache, and then I just felt like I was going to collapse, and I knew just before that happened what had happened.
I think what happens is you just can't clot. Is that right with brown snakes?
Yeah, neurotoxin makes you pass out, and I think it's supposed to fall down, hit your head and have a bleed.
All right. Were you with Lion again?
I was with another mate, but my fight or flight response the second before I passed out was to get completely naked. I took off all my clothes and then yelled at him to look at me, and then I collapsed. And he thought I was taking the piss. He didn't believe
me. Oh, because you wanted to see where you'd been bitten. That was irrational.
No. He didn't think. He thought I was just carrying on pretending. Because, he was walking in front of me. Next minute, he turns around with me yelling and I'm completely naked. And then I drop on the ground. And I came to a few times and convulsed a bit, and he still thought I was putting it on. And then apparently when I started dumping out sweat all out of me everywhere, he just realised, oh, it's actually really doing well.
You want a mate that will start sucking your toe to get all the venom out. Not that that would work at that point, but that's what you need from your mate. You don't need to just ignore you whilst you're doing that. That's incredible. Did you have to get anti-venom and stuff? Like, because the one that I know, he didn't, it was, I don't quite know what happened with mine, but it was so far after that it didn't really matter.
Yeah, my clotting, one of the old school, because I ended up getting taken to a remote clinic in Tom Price, and one of the old school ways of putting the blood in the, so that's why they didn't have any good clotting gear. They only had the glass tube, and they put a vial of your blood in the glass tube and they time it. And I think mine took over 4 or 5 minutes to clot.
Really? Because they don't have like a pathology department. They just...
Nah. And then I just got airlifted from there.
That's so good. So basic. And so makes sense. Oh, man. This is incredible. So you're very busy. You're very accident prone. tell us some of your favourite moments from midwifing. What surprised you? Apart from the babies. They're very, very cute.
I think when I first started out, midwifery in general, I thought I was in Sydney at the time, and I packed my highest van and drove across the Nullarbor to WA where I studied. And I thought I was just going to get like a midwifery ticket and then, move on and learn something new. But I fell in love with it. It is phenomenal to see. I think as a man too, like especially men, we can never fully understand what's going on. And just like even now, I'm still in awe of a birth. It is phenomenal. It just how it all happens and the strength of what women can do. And I remember even, as a student, there was a couple of funny stories where I was getting along really well with this couple, and then the baby was coming out. It came out hand first, and just something in me, I just high-fived the baby. It's coming out. And the midwife slapped me and said, "Don't you do that." But the couple, they were laughing like you, Georgie. They thought it was the best thing. And another funny thing I was quite nervous. A few things had been going wrong. And everyone was worried in the room, and I did the vaginal exam just to see how dilated this woman was. And when I did it, I felt something grab my finger, like inside. And it was the baby's hand had come down, and he just grabbed my finger. And I think the baby was just letting me know everything was going to be okay.
I think you're giving a baby far more brain than it has. But that is so cute. Oh, that's lovely.
It's very cute.
Well, it's been so lovely talking to you. We have a quiz section after the break if you're up for it. And up for grabs in the competition stakes is you can have whatever nursing or midwifery job you want for the rest of your life if you come top of the league table. You can have every Christmas off, but you never have to work nights again. Okay, so that's what you're playing for after the break. Try not to get bitten by anything whilst we're on the break. Welcome back, Christian. We are now in the engine room. Everything to play for here, Christian. I don't know if you know, but we have a quiz section.
Testing.
In this round, the first one is just we like to get different professions, and I'm counting you, same profession. Remote nursing is a little species of its own, much like intensive care is and other things. Like you're representing the remote nurses here. Just before we go on, who do you think makes a good remote nurse? Like, what do you think? If somebody's out there and they're thinking, I wonder if I can do it, do you think they just have a go? Or a few people do it because they're trying to escape, don't they? Missionaries, mercenaries and misfits.
Ah, yes, you've heard of the 5 M's. Yeah.
What, the other 2 M's? I know those three.
What was it? There's mad, mercenary, misfit.
Missionary, and... You're none of those things by the looks of it. But I know that people, when they've burnt all the bridges at home, often flee to country nursing and don't do well there. So
no, and they don't do well with the... Like, can you imagine the community that's receiving these?
Yes.
People?
Well, you think if your whole city doesn't like you at the minute, why go somewhere smaller? You're the problem. Fix that first. So who do you think is good to go out there? How many years should you have under your belt? How many... skills should you have?
Well, it is a resource scarce environment. So if you are a dual, nurse midwife, or you have other skills to bring, that's really helpful. the people that do well, the people that are curious, ask lots of questions, want to be involved, not finishing their day at the clinic and then going home to sit in aircon and watch Foxtel. They're finishing their shift at the clinic and they're going to hang out and go fishing or hunting with locals. They're making friends. Their kids are going to school with the local kids. You know, they're the people that do well in these communities and they get the most out of it as well.
Well, if that sounds like you, I know that the remote areas are really struggling for nurses at the moment because it used to be quite a financial incentive to get out there and now the city hospitals are offering the same because everywhere's short of nurses. So yeah, if you want an adventure and you want to broaden your life, it sounds like a great way to go. All right, our night shift. I thought I'd ask a nice question first. This bit is, you still do night shift, do you, Christian?
No, I haven't in a while.
All right, well, you know the kind of bollocks you talk about. At four in the morning and it just been quiet for too long and then someone cracks out a stupid question. All right, if you've got limitless money, Christian, limitless. And the reason I'm asking you the materialistic question, like I said, is because you, I think, just have a real good grasp of what is needed and what's not needed in life. Limitless money, you cannot do acts of charity. What is the first three things you are going to do with that money?
And you can't do acts of charity?
You can't pay off your mum's house even. It has to be. Like, so in the car I'm in, we've had anything from I'm getting a piano lounge and a permanent pianist in there, or I want a car garage full of all the cars from my childhood. So what is your no acts of charity?
I'd love to set up a research lab. So no limit to the money, right? Wait, no, I want to... It's kind of comes under sort of animal cruelty because I want to reverse engineer mosquitoes.
You want to what?
Reverse engineer mosquitoes so that they don't spread disease, but they spread vaccines.
That's incredible.
So if you get bitten by a vaccine, you get vaccinated.
That is so cool. I love your brain. I love it.
But that's a 4 a.m. You know, there's no ethical bounds in this.
There's no ethical bounds in this. No. Oh, that is so cool. You could get one.
And probably I'd invent edible paddle pop sticks.
Edible paddle pop. You're a good inventor. Everything I think I've invented has already been invented. I thought I'd invented sleeping bags with arms in, and then I Googled it and somebody had already made them. And then, because I don't like sleeping bags because you like that. Okay, I like edible paddle pop sticks. All of your things, there's nothing just completely selfish in this, is there?
I don't know what I...
Would you buy Midnight a really nice stable?
No, he's a horrible horse. No.
I'm trying to think what mine
was. I don't know.
Mine was a chef. I wanted a chef. I love cooking, but I'd cook with them. I just like the idea of someone showing me how to cook. But no.
I'm an introvert. I'd hate someone else being in my house all the time.
Would you? Oh, no, I'm going to all the staff, me. I'm having somebody, one person to fold the knickers, one person to clean the pool, I'm having all of them. All right, that is a good night shift question for people who are going into the night shifts or driving into the night shifts tonight. I think that's a good one. And I love your idea of reverse engineering mosquitoes. Could certainly just vaccinate all the mosquitoes. I don't know. Stop them giving everything. All right, now the next bit. This is against the clock. Now, you should be very good at working under pressure because you're out there on your own. The snake's on either side. There's a young lad that's had his head taken off by a combine harvester and you've got to glue it back on, whatever the fuck happens out there in those country areas. All right, so this is the alphabet game. You have 1 minute, Christian. Now, what you are playing for is your pick of shifts for the rest of your life. You can retire when you want. You can pick any nursing or midwifery job in the world you want, and you can pick your boss. It's like it's a dream. So this is what you're playing for. If you get the lowest, then you have to leave the profession altogether.
The people just form on purpose.
So the lowest at the moment, the person who's having to leave out of workforce is the barefoot nurse, who's a lovely fellow over in Melbourne who only got six. All right. So our producer, Stu, is on the clock. Your letter is double U. So W for where the fuck are ya? So W, all right. Are you ready, Christian?
Ready.
Against the clock. Beginning with W, name a medication.
Warfarin.
Drug of dependence.
Valium.
Part of the body.
Weenus. You know when you're in the shower and the water runs off
your
elbow?
You are definitely getting fired at the end of this. Medical speciality.
Weight-related surgery.
An infection.
Warts.
Yes. A disease.
Wandering spleen.
Heart.
Wandering spleen or up here, walkabout spleen.
Yes! A mobility aid.
Walking aid.
A street drug.
Oh, this is good. Whippets. Whack, weed, whiz.
Weed. Okay, whiz, yeah. The worst thing about nursing.
Underpaid, overworked.
Yeah.
Working, yes.
Okay. Something celiacs should not eat.
Wheat.
Something you can measure. Gosh. So you relied heavily there, Christian, on just starting other words with the letter W, which is not a tactic anyone has had before. But you do show yourself to have a magical brain. All right. So you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Narrowly beating the barefoot nurse by 1. So you do get to keep your job, but you don't get your dream job. You're nowhere near the leaderboard. You could have had, for drug of dependence, you could have had weed. For part of the body, for a midwife, mate, womb. Womb is part of the body. Women's health, infection was whooping cough. Disease was Wolf Parkinson White syndrome. And something you can measure, weight. Easy. Easy when you write the quiz and you don't have to think of the answers. Thank you so much for being on today. And like I said, if people want to follow you and keep up with your story or want to do remote nursing and want to look for some inspiration, don't hit them up for that, I don't think. Read some of his press releases and some press conferences and you'll see what kind of a life it is. Thank you so much for being on today, Christian Diggo.
Thank you.
Well, there you go, Swabbers. That's what it's like in the bush. In the bush. We're coming very nearly to the end of season 3 of the Swab Now. We are loving all your comments, all your Facebook, all your ridiculous stories on the Swab Facebook page. And as we're wrapping up this season, we've got one more amazing finale to come. So do look out for the next episode. So to all of you out there, stay safe, stay sane, and stay swabby. See you next time on the Swab.
Ample. Hee hee.
Is this thing on?
Yeah, that's on. Don't touch that.